So imagine it's a freezing January night in the Greater Toronto area. The wind is just howling outside. You're shivering in your living room, but relief is on the way.
Right, you can hear it kicking on.
Exactly. Down in your basement, the furnace just roars to life. You hear the fans spinning up, and just as you start to feel that very first whisper of warm air coming through the floorboards,
It just dies.
yes, it completely shuts down. 2 minutes later, it tries again. Roar, spin, and then just silence. And it's not just broken, right? It's like a machine that's essentially panicking.
Yeah, that is the absolute definition of mechanical distress. I mean, the system is desperately trying to protect itself from a catastrophic failure.
And the result is you're trapped in a freezing house with a furnace that sounds like it's working overtime.
Exactly.
Well, welcome to a brand new deep dive. Today, we're tearing into a comprehensive 2026 guide from a GTA HVC company, and it's dedicated entirely to this incredibly frustrating phenomenon.
Right, which the industry calls short cycling.
Yeah, short cycling. And our mission today is highly specific. We want to equip you with the exact knowledge you need to diagnose a finicky heating system, save yourself a potentially massive amount of money on unnecessary diagnostic
Oh,
fees.
yeah, those add up
They
fast.
really do. And we also want you to understand the absolute red lines for when it's time to step back and call in a professional.
Okay, let's unpack this.
Because the line between, a $5 DIY fix and a terrifying safety hazard is surprisingly thin here.
Right.
Understanding the mechanics of what's happening in your basement can literally save your home.
So let's establish the baseline first. If my furnace is short cycling, it implies there's a normal cycle it's supposed to be following.
Yeah, there is.
What does a healthy day at the office look like for a modern heating system?
Well, a healthy heating cycle in a typical GTA winter scenario, it takes about 10 to 15 minutes from start to finish.
Okay, 10 to 15 minutes.
Right. So the thermostat on your wall calls for heat. The very first thing that happens is an inducer fan kicks on, and that's to clear the air out.
Exactly. It pulls air through the system and vents any leftover gases. Then the igniter fires up, the gas valve opens, and the burners actually light.
Okay, got it.
But the system waits. It waits until the heat exchanger, which is this main metal chamber, is physically hot. Only then does the main blower fan start pushing that warm air through your ductwork.
Ah, so it doesn't just blow cold air at you right away.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So it runs steadily for about 15 minutes. The ambient temperature in your house rises to meet your setting, and then the system shuts down in reverse order.
It rests and then repeats.
Yeah, maybe 3 to 5 times an hour.
So that sounds like a marathon runner pacing themselves. It's a steady, sustainable rhythm.
Precisely.
But short cycling completely interrupts that biology. Instead of a nice, productive 15-minute burn, the furnace just taps out after 2 to 5 minutes.
Yeah, and because of that, the ambient air in the house never actually reaches the target temperature.
It just gives up.
The machine stops, waits a few minutes, and then restarts that entire ignition sequence all over again.
Thinking about the physical wear and tear of that, is short cycling basically like driving a car exclusively in stop-and-go gridlock traffic?
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
Like you're just stuck on the Don Valley Parkway bumper to bumper rather than cruising at a steady 100 kilometers an hour on the highway.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, that analogy captures the mechanical reality perfectly. I mean, think about what stop-and-go traffic does to your car's transmission.
Right, your brakes, the engine, it's brutal.
Exactly. The most stressful part of a furnace's entire job is the startup sequence.
Really? Just turning on?
Oh, yeah. That ignition phase requires a massive draw of electricity, the sudden opening of valves, a rapid blast of intense heat.
Wow.
So when the system short cycles, it goes through that incredibly stressful startup sequence 20 to 25 times an hour.
Instead of the normal 3 to 5 times, so
Yeah.
the workload on the internal components just skyrockets.
It accelerates wear on every single moving part. But the critical hidden danger here is the toll it takes on the heat exchanger.
The metal chamber you mentioned earlier.
Right. This is the heavy metal component that physically separates the toxic combustion gases from the clean air being blown into your home.
Okay, that sounds important.
Very. When the burners ignite, that metal gets incredibly hot and it actually expands.
Oh, it physically moves.
Yeah, and when the cycle ends, it cools down and contracts. The metal literally breathes.
I assume the engineers designed it to handle that expansion and contraction, though, right?
They did, but only for a normal lifespan of standard 15-minute cycles.
Ah, I see where this is going.
Yeah. When you force that metal to expand and contract 20 times an hour, you introduce severe thermal stress. the structural integrity of the seal breaks down.
You just fatigue.
Exactly. And eventually, those microscopic stress fractures turn into visible cracks.
Wait, a crack in the component separating toxic gas from my living room air? Okay, so that moves us from a frustrating inconvenience to an actual life-threatening hazard.
It does. Carbon monoxide can leak directly into the supply air. Plus, going back to your traffic analogy, every single time that furnace starts up, it burns a surge of gas just to establish the flame.
Just to get going.
Right. So you're burning excess fuel, spiking your 2026 utility bills, and the house isn't even getting warm.
Because the cycle aborts before the heat even reaches the vents.
Exactly. You're basically paying a premium to slowly destroy your own machine.
Wow. Okay, so we know the system is panic stopping to prevent a total meltdown. The logical next question is, what actually triggers that safety response?
Right. Let's get into the causes.
Let's pivot to the culprits, starting with the ones that you, the listener, can actually investigate and fix yourself. Because the number one most common cheapest fix mentioned in our sources is, well, it's almost embarrassingly simple.
It really is.
It's the air filter.
A dirty, matted air filter is responsible for a staggering number of emergency HVAC calls. It is by far the easiest trap for a homeowner to fall into.
Okay, but I need to understand the physics here. How does a $20 piece of pleated paper overpower and shut down a heavy-duty industrial machine?
Well, we have to shift how we think about the air flowing through the furnace. We tend to think that air is just there to be warmed up for our comfort.
Right, to keep me warm.
But in reality, that air is also there to cool the furnace itself.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The blower motor pushes cold return air from your hallways over that blazing hot heat exchanger to strip the heat away and carry it into the house.
Oh, wow. So the air acts as the engine coolant.
Exactly. Now, imagine your air filter is completely choked with dust, pet hair, maybe drywall particles from a renovation.
It's just caked.
You've essentially put a physical wall in front of the blower motor. The fan is spinning, but it can't pull enough air through the system to strip the heat away from the heat exchanger.
So the heat just gets trapped inside the steel cabinet.
Yes, and the internal temperature spikes rapidly. Modern furnaces are equipped with a high-limit safety switch, which is essentially a little probe sitting near the heat exchanger. When it detects that the ambient temperature inside the cabinet has crossed a dangerous threshold, it trips.
It just kills the power.
It kills the gas valve instantly to prevent a fire or permanent warping of the metal.
So the furnace goes dark, cools down for a few minutes, tries again, the heat gets trapped again, it overheats, and boom, you're caught in a short cycling loop.
You got it. But the solution takes less than 5 minutes. You pull the filter out. If it looks like a thick gray blanket, you just go to the hardware store.
Right, buy a replacement.
Slide it in, give the furnace maybe 20 minutes to fully cool down, and turn the thermostat back up.
And that's it.
Very often, the system will just resume its normal 15-minute cycles, and you just save yourself an $80 to $120 diagnostic fee.
That is the ultimate DIY victory. But, okay, if a clogged filter on the intake side causes overheating, what happens when people intentionally block the airflow on the output side?
Oh, this is a big one.
Yeah, I have to ask about this very common practice. I've always been told that closing the supply vents in unused rooms, like a spare bedroom or an unfinished basement, saves energy.
Right.
Like it forces all the hot air into the rooms you're actually using. Wouldn't that be a good thing?
That is perhaps the most persistent, damaging myth in home heating.
Wait, really? Pushing the air to the living room doesn't work.
No. Closing vents does not save energy, and it actively damages the equipment.
Why?
Because the furnace blower is mathematically calibrated to operate against a specific amount of static pressure. And that pressure is determined by the total open area of your ductwork system.
Okay, I'm following.
So when you walk around your house closing vents in spare rooms, you aren't just redirecting air. You are dramatically increasing the resistance in the entire system.
Let me see if I have this right. It's like putting your thumb over the end of a flowing garden hose.
That is the exact mechanism. You create massive back pressure.
Oh.
The blower motor struggles against the resistance. The overall volume of air moving over the heat exchanger drops significantly. And you get the exact same catastrophic overheating response as you would with a clogged filter.
The high limit switch trips and the short cycling begins all over again.
Exactly. Furthermore, that back pressure can actually blow out the seals on your ductwork hidden behind your walls, causing permanent air leaks.
So the takeaway is leave the vents open, let the machine breathe the way the engineers designed it to breathe.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, if the air can't circulate through the house, that's one pressure problem. But high-efficiency systems also need to push combustion gases outside the house entirely, right?
They do.
And our sources highlight an external DIY check regarding the exhaust flues.
Right. High-efficiency furnaces, which are pretty much the standard in the GTA now, they don't vent hot exhaust up through a traditional masonry chimney on the roof.
No.
No. They extract so much heat from the gas that the exhaust is actually quite cool. So it vents out the side of your house through these white PVC plastic pipes.
Ah, which means those pipes are sticking out of the brick right at ground level,
Exactly.
directly in the line of fire for a massive January snowdrift.
Snow, ice buildup, or, in the fall, leaves and bird nests. If that exhaust pipe is restricted, the dangerous combustion gases have nowhere to go.
So they just back up.
They start backing up into the furnace.
Yeah.
But the system is equipped with a pressure switch that monitors the draft in that pipe.
Okay, another safety switch.
Right. The second it detects a blockage, it shuts the entire ignition sequence down to prevent carbon monoxide from flooding your basement.
So the fix is literally just putting on your winter boots, walking outside with a shovel, and making sure the snowbank hasn't buried your exhaust pipes.
Yeah, clear a 3-foot radius around those pipes and see if the furnace fires back up. It's that simple.
Okay, so let's say you do the homework. You change the filter, you verify all the vents are open, you clear the snow off the exhaust, but the furnace is still clicking off after 3 minutes.
Right, then we have a bigger problem.
This points to a deeper flaw. Sometimes the flaw isn't a broken part, it's the entire design of the system.
Yes.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the source text highlights a massive irony. Having a furnace that is too powerful for your house is actually a critical error.
It is. We have a cultural tendency to believe that bigger is always better.
Right, especially when facing a Canadian winter. Give me the biggest heater you have.
Exactly. But an oversized furnace is a primary driver of chronic short cycling.
But why would a contractor even install a massive furnace in a modest home? Wouldn't they want to match the equipment to the square footage?
It often comes down to the psychology of HVAC sales and a fear of callbacks.
Really?
Yeah, a contractor never wants a homeowner calling them in February complaining that the house is still cold. So, to play it safe, they might skip the math and install a unit with a much higher BTU, British thermal unit output, than the physical structure actually requires.
Just to guarantee it blasts heat. But if it's super powerful, shouldn't it just heat the house up extremely fast, satisfy the thermostat, and go to sleep? Why is heating the house quickly a bad thing?
Because the thermodynamics of a home require time.
Okay.
The oversized furnace blasts an enormous, overwhelming amount of heat into the ductwork. The thermostat on the wall registers that target temperature almost instantly and shuts the furnace off.
Oh, I see.
But because the cycle was so incredibly brief, that warm air never had the time to properly circulate to the far corners of the house
Right.
or to warm the physical objects in the room, the furniture, the walls, the floors.
So the hallway where the thermostat is located is boiling hot, but the bedrooms at the end of the ductwork run are freezing.
Exactly. You experience wild temperature swings. You also get completely stagnant air and uneven humidity because the blower just isn't running long enough to mix the air properly.
That sounds awful.
And the system does 10 rapid-fire sprints an hour instead of 3 steady, even jogs. It destroys the lifespan of the equipment.
Can a technician just like turn down the gas valve, just throttle the power back to make it run longer?
Unfortunately, no. A furnace is engineered to run at a specific capacity. The only real resolution for an oversized furnace is tearing it out and replacing it with a correctly sized unit.
Oh man, that is a painful financial mistake to uncover.
It's brutal. And this is why the source guide is adamant that any new installation requires a proper manual J load calculation.
Manual J, what is that?
This is not just a guess based on square footage. A manual J calculation factors in the R value of your wall insulation, the type of windows you have, the direction your house faces for solar heat gain.
Wow, it's that detailed.
Oh, yeah, and the local climate data. It calculates the exact amount of heat your specific house loses on the coldest day of the year and matches the furnace precisely to that number.
So never let a contractor eyeball it.
Yeah.
All right, let's move from design flaws to actual mechanical component failures. The text gets very specific about two components. First up is the flame sensor. What is the actual physics behind this part, and why does it cause a short cycle?
Well, the flame sensor is a brilliant safety mechanism. It's a tiny metal rod, usually about the size of a pencil, that sits directly in the path of the burner flame.
Okay.
and it relies on a principle called flame ionization.
Flame ionization. So we're dealing with electrical currents inside the fire.
Exactly. Fire isn't just hot air. It actually contains charged particles. When the gas ignites, the flame creates an ionized path that can conduct a microscopic electrical current, a microampere current, through the rod and back to the furnace's control board.
That is wild. The furnace is literally using electricity to feel if the fire is physically there. Like, I feel the current, therefore the gas is burning safely.
That is exactly the communication loop.
Okay.
But over months and years of operation, the combustion process leaves behind a microscopic layer of soot, carbon buildup, and oxidation on that metal rod.
Which acts as an insulator.
Precisely. The flame is roaring, but the insulated rod cannot absorb the microampere current. The control board assumes the flame blew out.
Oh, no.
And to prevent raw, unburned natural gas from filling your basement and causing an explosion, it instantly shuts off the gas valve.
So it's just doing its job.
Right. The system purges, tries to light again, fails to sense the flame again, and eventually goes into a hard lockout.
The furnace shuts down out of an abundance of caution, just because it has a dirty sensor.
Yeah. And the repair is incredibly straightforward for a professional. They remove the rod and gently clean it with fine steel wool to restore the conductive surface.
Simple enough. Okay, the second mechanical issue is gas pressure. I was reading through the source, and it sparked a thought about diagnosing the house as a whole.
Oh, let's hear it.
If I'm sitting in my kitchen and I notice that the burners on my gas stove are acting strangely, like the flames are weak, maybe sputtering, and at the exact same time, my furnace down in the basement starts short cycling, Is there a connection there?
That is a phenomenal deduction.
Yes.
If you're seeing low gas pressure symptoms across multiple appliances simultaneously, you are likely not dealing with a furnace glitch at all.
Okay.
You're dealing with a broader utility supply issue or a failure of the main gas regulator on the outside of your house.
So the furnace flame sensor is shutting the system down because the weak gas supply can't maintain a stable enough flame to conduct the current.
Exactly. The furnace is starving for fuel. A technician would need to use a specialized diagnostic tool called a manometer to measure the actual manifold gas pressure.
Which is the physical force of the gas entering the burners.
Right. And they have to compare it to the manufacturer's exact specifications.
Okay. Measuring microampere currents with multimeters, using manometers to check gas manifold pressure, it is safe to say that at this point you, the listener, have officially crossed out of DIY territory.
Absolutely.
We need to pivot to the professional realm. Who do you call, and what is this going to do to your wallet? But let's establish the safety and legal red lines first.
Yeah, this is crucial. We've discussed how robust these safety switches are. But if they fail, or if the heat exchanger fractures, the situation becomes lethal quickly.
Right.
If you ever smell the distinct odor of natural gas near the unit, if your carbon monoxide detector sounds an alarm, or if you see black soot and scorch marks building up on the outside of the burner compartment, all troubleshooting stops.
You do not go poking around the cabinet with a piece of steel wool.
No. You evacuate the house immediately. You get your family into fresh air, and you call the Enbridge Gas Emergency Line at 1-866-763-5427, or you just call 911.
Wow, okay.
This is a highly volatile combustion appliance. Safety is non-negotiable.
And beyond the immediate physical danger, there are serious legal and financial consequences to messing with this equipment yourself, right? The text highlights a strict Ontario regulation.
It does. Under the Technical Standards and Safety Act, all gas appliance work in Ontario legally requires a TSSA licensed G1 or G2 gas technician.
So this is not a scenario for a weekend warrior with a YouTube tutorial.
Not at all. If you unbolt a gas valve yourself, you are breaking the law.
Right.
More importantly, if you make a mistake and cause a fire, your home insurance provider will investigate, find the unlicensed work, and completely void your coverage.
The risk profile is just astronomical. You have to call a pro. So let's break down the 2026 pricing from the guide. What is the financial damage when the licensed technician actually arrives?
And the positive takeaway is that many short cycling culprits are relatively minor repairs.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Having a professional diagnose the system, clean or replace that flame sensor, swap out a faulty high limit switch, or clear a deep blockage in the internal venting, that will generally run between $100 and $400.
Okay, so it's an annoying, unexpected expense, but it won't force you to remortgage the house.
Right, plus the standard diagnostic fee of $80 to $120, which, you know, many reputable companies will actually apply toward the cost of the repair anyway.
Okay, fair enough.
But the truly painful decision, the crossroads for the homeowner, arrives if the technician diagnoses a failed heat exchanger.
Ah, the breathing metal that cracked under the thermal stress of short cycling.
Exactly. Replacing a heat exchanger is practically rebuilding the furnace. It requires dismantling the entire cabinet. In 2026, you're looking at a repair bill ranging from $800 to $1,800, depending on the model.
Ouch. At what point does the math flip? Like, when does it make more sense to just walk away from the broken machine and buy a whole new furnace?
The industry rule of thumb is the 12-year mark. The average lifespan of a modern furnace is 15 to 20 years. If your unit is over 12 years old and suffers a cracked heat exchanger, the math heavily favors a full replacement.
Right. Funneling $1,000 into a 15-year-old system is a terrible investment.
Because the core components are already past their prime. You might fix the heat exchanger today, but next winter the blower motor seizes or the primary control board fries.
It just becomes a compounding money pit.
Exactly. Furthermore, investing in a new, correctly sized modeling using that manual J calculation high efficiency model will reduce your monthly gas consumption enough to help offset the upfront cost over the next decade.
Okay, before we wrap up, there is a genius piece of advice in the source material for anyone who does have to call a technician. While you are waiting for them to arrive, pull out your phone and use the stopwatch.
Yes, I love this tip.
Time exactly how many minutes and seconds the furnace runs before the safety switch kills it, and time exactly how long it stays off before attempting to restart.
Handing the technician those exact timing intervals the moment they walk down the stairs dramatically accelerates their diagnostic process.
It's like giving them the vital signs.
Exactly. It gives them the exact rhythm of the malfunction, which points them toward specific safety switches. It saves them time, which saves you hourly labor costs.
Amazing. All right, let's do a rapid-fire recap of the best preventative medicine.
Yeah.
How do we keep the machine out of stop-and-go traffic in the first place? Number one, set a recurring calendar reminder on your phone to check that $5 air filter every single month during the peak heating season. Do not let the system choke on its own air.
Crucial.
Number two, schedule an annual fall tune-up. Pay a technician to clean the flame sensor and verify the gas manifold pressure in September before it fails on a minus 20 degree night in January.
Yeah, it all comes down to unrestricted airflow and proactive maintenance. Treat the system to its baseline conditions, and it won't be forced into those catastrophic repetitive emergency shutdowns.
Keep the air moving, keep the vents open, keep the snow clear. That brings us to the end of today's analysis, but I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over, looking ahead at the technology in our homes.
Yeah. As our houses become increasingly integrated with smart technology, consider the trajectory of HVACAC diagnostics.
Right.
How long is it going to be until our wall thermostats are sensitive enough to independently detect the microscopic thermal stress of a struggling heat exchanger?
Oh, wow.
Imagine a system that continuously monitors its own airflow resistance, recognizes it's about to enter a short cycling loop, and automatically orders its own replacement filter in the mail days before the homeowner even realizes there's a problem in the basement.
A house that heals itself before you even know it's sick. I'd love that. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Stay curious, keep those vents open, and we'll catch you next time.